Hello and welcome to the Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. I'm Naomi Fowler. Coming up later...
EU tax policymakers should be protected from the vested interests of the tax avoidance industry. What we want to see is a real change of culture which stops seeing the Big Four as legitimate, trusted, neutral partners when it comes to stamping out tax avoidance.
Lobbying by the Big Four accountancy firms and big business in the European Union. We discuss building a firewall to protect the public interest. No time for a news roundup. Let's go straight to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Okay, John, this month the United Nations Rapporteur on Human Rights and Extreme Poverty, Professor Philip Alston, has announced that he's going to visit the United Kingdom to investigate the human rights consequences of austerity. That's something we've talked about on the Taxcast many times as a political choice based on failed economic thinking. And I interviewed Professor Philip Alston in edition 74 of the Taxcast about what turned out to be a very controversial report which he made on his visit to the United States and the political choices being made there. The actual report is really hard-hitting, and it basically says the Trump administration is knowingly exacerbating levels of inequality there that are already the most extreme in the Western world. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he makes of the United Kingdom.
Indeed. So I've just come back from working in the United States and travelled right the way across the country from east to west. So I've witnessed with my own eyes some of the poverty that Professor Alston was reporting on. I mean, I saw large townships of people living in porter cabins and rundown sheds. I saw vast numbers of people suffering from obesity and other diet-inflicted health problems, homeless people on the streets, and indeed whole cities, particularly in the area around Chicago, where entire districts have collapsed, completely empty, and only a few people are still living there. Not to mention, of course, the appalling situation of Flint, Michigan, where unelected officials switched their water supply to save money by buying polluted water to provide the citizens of Flint, Michigan, with water which is causing really serious health problems. Certainly human rights in the United States are in retreat. And this retreat, I think, is highlighted by the announcement in June by someone called Nikki Haley, who's the US permanent representative to the United Nations, that the US is now withdrawing from the Human Rights Council, which is the key United Nations authority here. As much as anything else, I think this reflects Mr. Trump's distaste for all international organizations. But a lot of people on the far right in the United States resent the very idea that human rights have an economic or social dimension. I think that's part of the issue that we're running up against. Nikki Haley, for her part, she's labelled the Human Rights Council as a cesspool of political bias, presumably because the council doesn't reflect Trump's personal set of political biases. And whilst we're talking about the subject of cesspools, Professor Alston has commented that while making his researches in the United States, and I quote here, "I witnessed raw sewage pouring into the gardens of people who could never afford to pay $30,000 for their own septic systems." So this is turning into a really toxic argument between the US and the United Nations. So what will Professor Alston find to report on when he visits Britain to research poverty in that country? As a starting point, I'd imagine that he'll be looking very carefully at Conservative government's flagship programme to replace existing welfare payments with a single welfare payment called Universal Credit. Now, earlier this year, the government's own National Audit Office published findings that were highly critical of the Universal Credit programme, arguing that it was pushing welfare claimants, which, by the way, covers approximately 2 million households, 3 million or so people, into rent arrears and extreme hardship. My own local food bank has recently been asking me for donations to buy soap, toothpaste and women's sanitary pads. So it's not just food, it's a whole range of really important household items. The Trussell Trust in the UK, which is a leading food bank charity, has reported that on average there's a 52% increase of demand associated with the implementation and rollout of the government's universal credit scheme. So clearly this is a welfare programme which is actually making things very much worse than they were beforehand. Now, another issue I think that we at the Tax Justice Network would hope that Professor Alstom will investigate during his visit to the UK is Britain's role as a tax haven. Now, this is something we've regularly discussed on the tax cast. When states, like the UK, for example, deliberately enable tax evasion and encourage tax avoidance, or provide billions of pounds annually in tax breaks and reliefs to ultra-high net worth oligarchs and to big companies, this translates into austerity programmes which target public health, target public safety, education, environment, and the whole range of services that support human rights. And we'll also be asking him to consider how London's role as a global offshore financial centre undermines human rights across the world as a result of tax evasion and tax avoidance.
Right, and in the TaxCast interview that I mentioned before, he did say, "There is no doubt in my mind that tax policy is human rights policy." So it's going to be pretty interesting, because in Britain we've seen choices by government to continually cut the corporate tax rate and many other policies beside that. He's coming in November of 2018, so we'll be reporting on that a bit more on the TaxCast.
I think Professor Alstom's absolutely right when he says that tax policy is such an important part of human rights thing. When governments commit to human rights, they also commit to the funding of those human rights provisions. There's a strong commitment which they have to make all available resources necessary to achieve their obligations. They, on the one hand, give away huge tax breaks to the rich, and also support tax evasion and tax avoidance, while on the other hand saying they don't have enough money to fund basic human rights, including security and shelter and access to clean water and all of these things, then it's quite clear that they are not actually meeting the commitments they made when they signed up to human rights, and they should be challenged on that basis.
OK, let's talk about the organisation Transparify, which this month has published its global ratings on the financial transparency of major think tanks for 2018. It does it every year. As usual, the Tax Justice Network gets full marks for full transparency. I wouldn't expect it to be any other way. But other organisations don't do so well. And funnily enough, it's nearly always the ones that you might say are on the political right that are ranked highly opaque. One such organisation is the rather grand-sounding Institute for Economic Affairs in the UK, the well-known champion of the so-called free market, which actually seems to, in fact, mean rigged markets, privatisation of everything that moves, and crap rights for workers. Anyway, they've been ranked highly opaque. They also, this month, it was announced they're being investigated by the UK's Charity Commission on whether or not they've broken charity regulations on political independence. Believe it or not, this Institute for Economic Affairs is a registered educational charity, and their official purpose is helping the general public and mankind. Lovely. So it's exempt from paying tax, which it doesn't believe in anyway. It's wielding huge influence with governments, given platforms and mainstream media, without actually declaring who funds them. And they're not even like PR firms, because at least we would then know who funds them. I mean, we have our suspicions if you look at the type of causes that they advocate on.
Yeah, Transparify takes a close look at the funding questions and condemns think tanks that are either opaque, as is the case with the Institute of Economic Affairs, or even deceptive, as is the case with an organisation called the International Institute for Strategic Studies, which is downright deceptive about its funding.
Right, and when you look at the power of so-called think tanks in general, it's important to recognise their networked push they're involved in, kind of ecosystem, if you like. And if you look at the Brexit referendum, there's a whole series of so-called free market groups working towards the same goals. They're known as the Brexit Syndicate. That includes organisations like the Institute for Economic Affairs, the Taxpayers Alliance, also opaque on its funding sources, Cambridge Analytica, Breitbart. You can read all about that list on www.thebrexitsyndicate.com. But however much you can criticise the European Union for allowing itself to be infiltrated by special interests and big business, and we'll hear all about that in a moment in a special feature, getting Britain out of the EU for the Brexit Syndicate was very much an attempt to split Britain from the herd and ensure it had the freedom, as they see it, to rewrite the rule book on capitalism, cut taxes even further, use trade treaties to eliminate all sorts of standards and protections guaranteed by the European Union. I think TaxCast listeners in the United States will be very familiar with the ways these groups and dark money and big business lobbying works. All of that is alive and kicking in the UK too. Very powerful forces indeed.
Yeah, think tanks generate news stories. They're in the media all the time. In 1994, the London Times newspaper printed an op-ed written by a very senior Conservative politician and former government minister, in which he said, and I'm quoting here, "Without the Institute of Economic Affairs and its clones, no Thatcher and possibly no Reagan. So let's have no doubt at all about the extent of their powers to influence political processes." The common factor shared by most of the think tanks that are either covertly lobbying for billionaires or in the business of pouring fake news and other confusing messages into the democratic process is that they're very unwilling to reveal who funds them. I mean, for example, the Institute of Economic Affairs does not disclose its funders, though we know that big tobacco companies are amongst its funders. And yet, as you say, it's got charitable status. But what makes it worse is that every day, day in, day out, the BBC and other very, very prominent media use the Institute of Economic Affairs as a supposedly independent commentator. But the public has no way of knowing whose interests are being promoted. So if you step back and look at the Institute of Economic Affairs over time, you can see a pattern of promoting privatisation, of promoting deregulation, pushing for tax cuts for the rich and the powerful, and generally rolling back the welfare state, all of which are political rather than charitable issues. They are much more of a lobby. They certainly don't have a strong educational purpose. As always, it's helpful to look at the other end of the spectrum, and there you'll find plenty of think tanks which identify themselves happily as think tanks, who publish their finance, publish their funders, and that, I think, helps build the public confidence in their integrity. What can be done, particularly in the short term, to kind of push back against this use or misuse of the think tank term by what are essentially lobbying organisations? A starting point would be for the BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation, to stop using the Institute of Economic Affairs and similar organisations which are identified by Transparify as being either highly opaque or deceptive. We cannot allow the public to be misled by organisations which are essentially lobbying fronts for big business and for very wealthy oligarchs.
Yeah, and just to slip in at the end there, Darren Grimes, one of the people that used to work for the Leave campaign, which did a lot to tip the scales in favour of Brexit during the referendum. The Leave campaign was fined by the UK's Electoral Commission recently for spending offences during the campaign, otherwise known as cheating. Darren Grimes is now working as the Institute for Economic Affairs as their digital manager. So these things are all linked.
Yes, and I think we can extend those links even further. And as you know, I worked for many years as economic advisor to a tax haven called Jersey. And whilst I was working in Jersey, many of the key people I was meeting there, people who were promoting tax havens or academics who were trying to provide an academic gloss to the work of tax havens, were linked to the Institute of Economic Affairs, including, by the way, my former boss. So I think that they are deeply embedded within the global tax haven movement, particularly with the British global tax haven movement.
John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. The amount of tax revenue countries are losing each year because of tax-dodging advice sold to corporations by the so-called Big Four accountancy firms is staggering. Deloitte, EY, Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCoopers and KPMG have been involved in scandal after scandal, yet nothing seems to dent the influence of the Big Four on governments and their policies. This month, The TaxCast looks at their lobbying in the European Union and how it could build a firewall to protect its citizens.
There is an inherent conflict of interest between those who advise corporations on how to avoid tax to be advising governments and public institutions on tax avoidance prevention. We are amazed that there isn't more concern or regard given to the issue of conflict of interest.
Vicky Cann of the Corporate Europe Observatory. They've got an explosive new report out this month called Accounting for Influence: How the Big Four are Embedded in European Union Tax Avoidance Policy.
After Washington DC, we think Brussels is the next biggest lobby capital. Decision makers in Brussels are making decisions for 500 million plus citizens. So perhaps it's not surprising that lobbyists throw so much money at the process in Brussels. And we know that the Big Four, they do lobby in their own right. Between them, they spend over 2 million, 2.5 million on lobbying each year in Brussels. And between them, they have the equivalent of 30 full-time lobbyists running around active on their behalf. But as well as this lobbying under their own name, with their own hats on, they also use these lobby vehicles, and some of them were news to us.
Okay, and these are organisations your report talks about that none of us have probably ever heard of. The European Contact Group, the European Business Initiative for Taxation, Accountancy Europe, AmCham EU. Let's take them one by one.
Yes, so we have the European Business Initiative on Taxation, EBIT. That's run by PwC, and it brings together big business with an interest in keeping taxes as low as possible. So we're talking about BP, Pfizer and Airbus, examples of companies that are members of that group. We have this strange beast of the European Contact Group, which was one that we'd never heard of before. It's an informal grouping of just the Big Four plus the next two in that list, which are Grant Thornton from the UK and a German organisation called BDO. This has a goal, a stated goal of shaping the regulatory environment, which is a nice euphemism, I think, for lobbying, and shares an office with Deloitte. And very much a Big Four vehicle, which curiously was apparently set up even at the request of the European Commission some years ago.
Okay, then we have Accountancy Europe.
Yes, Accountancy Europe, more of a, I would say, a traditional lobbying trade association representing the accountancy profession. But again, the board is packed full of Big Four figures, and PwC chairs its tax policy group. And then, yes, this complicated organisation, AmCham EU, which stands for the American Chamber of Commerce to the EU. If you've been following the debates around the EU-US trade deal TTIP, you might be familiar with AmCham EU. It's a big lobby organisation based in Brussels, which represents big US multinationals to the EU institutions. So that's ExxonMobil and Facebook and Monsanto and others. And again, its tax committee is chaired by PwC. So I think these lobby vehicles are interesting in a number of ways. The Big Four does do lobbying in their own right. They have meetings and they produce position papers and things. But sometimes they also use these vehicles. Perhaps they might be when they don't want to be associated with a particular position. Perhaps they might use these particular lobby vehicles. But I think these lobby vehicles are also very helpful in that it multiplies the voices in Brussels arguing for particular positions, but also I think brings in some of these big corporate names. And I think it's sort of strengthens their lobby power in Brussels.
Right. People might argue, quite rightly, I suppose, that everyone should have their say in bringing new information and new ideas to policy making. How would you compare the kind of access that these organisations, whether that's through lobby vehicles or through other means, how would you compare their access to the European Union in terms of policy making and influence with, let's say, campaigning groups like yours, the Corporate Europe Observatory, and our own, the Tax Justice Network?
Well, I think there's clearly a disparity there. I mean, across the board in Brussels, we see that corporate interests massively outnumber, outgun, outresource public interest groups like NGOs or like trade unions. There are excellent NGOs working in Brussels on these issues, and the trade unions do take an active interest. But when you compare, I think, the resourcing that the Big Four have together with their big business friends. And it's not just the corporations themselves, but again, it's the trade associations. Business Europe, for example, which represents business across the whole of Europe and is perhaps the most influential lobbyist in Brussels, very much reinforces the messages that come from the Big Four and industry on matters around tax and tax avoidance. There is a massive imbalance there. I think it's a challenge to tackle that and to make sure that the public interest voice is heard. And of course, that's just at the lobbying level. And the point that we're making in the report is not just lobbying by the Big Four that is so influential. It's actually the way in which they are embedded in the policy making process. The other big area that we identify in the report are these advisory committees, which are set up by the Commission to advise on things like how to prevent tax avoidance. But we see PwC, other big corporations are present in those advisory groups. So having a foothold in the process of developing policy, and while NGOs and trade unions also have some presence there, there is a continual imbalance and that needs to be addressed.
Right, yeah, because I mean, we'll go on any advisory group they want. But there are also serious issues around the fact that the Big Four get tens of millions of euros from the European Commission in public procurement contracts each year.
Yes, our report shows that the Big Four do receive significant sums of money for studies on tax or tax-related issues. And we did kind of think that perhaps after the LuxLeaks scandal that maybe we wouldn't be seeing that anymore, when the LuxLeaks scandal so sort of revealed the role of the Big Four in facilitating corporate tax avoidance. We thought this soaking up of public procurement contracts might end. But in fact, earlier this year, three members of the Big Four, PwC, Deloitte and KPMG, were awarded over 10 million collectively for studies on taxation and customs issues. Last year, we looked at a contract that KPMG had with the Commission to look at state-owned enterprises and privatisation across the 28 member states. So it's not just on tax, there are other problematic contracts as well. And perhaps it's even worse than that, because we also find examples where the Commission, the European Commission, is hiring tax advisers, the Big Four, to give input on the very measures that they have been lobbying against. So we know that Deloitte has been hired to conduct studies on transfer pricing, a method that multinationals use to avoid tax. And that's despite the fact that Deloitte itself advises corporate clients on transfer pricing and has itself lobbied against stricter measures to control transfer pricing. So there really are major concerns about these public procurement contracts and the conflicts of interest that they provoke.
Okay, and then your report talks about the so-called revolving door phenomenon.
Yeah, so the revolving door is when we have public officials moving to the private sector, or we have private sector staffers moving into public policy roles. And the revolving door is very well known and well greased, I'm afraid, in Brussels. But I must say, it feels particularly acute in the area of tax, partly because we see it at all levels of the EU decision making hierarchy. It was quite shocking to see just how normalised the revolving door was. And of course, the real problems that this can bring, because when you have this easy movement between the regulators and the industry, then of course, when you have insider knowledge, you have insider know-how, you have contact books, you have influence, you have a shared way of thinking and working. All of that is a real advantage when it comes to having your voice heard in Brussels.
Okay, let's talk about an example of how the Big Four has either changed or influenced policy making in the EU. There are two really interesting examples in your report that you talk about, but let's just focus on their influence on public country-by-country reporting for big corporations. The Tax Justice Network helped initiate the original idea. We've talked about it a lot on the TaxCast.
Yes, public country by country reporting. This is an idea that has been around for a long time and would require corporations to publicly report profits in the countries they operate in rather than shift their profits to tax havens and then pay little or no tax. And so we saw the Big Four lobbying fiercely against this and fiercely against this kind of information being reported. Of course, they wanted a voluntary approach and wanted to protect information that multinationals might want to keep private and out of the public domain. However, the Panama Papers came along in spring 2016, which was extremely timely for this proposal because it really put the issue of tax avoidance and tax intermediaries, tax advisors onto the political agenda. And the outrage, I think, around that those publications meant that actually the Commission's proposal was better than had been expected. So, of course, then the lobby bandwagon moved on to another EU institution. This time it was the European Parliament, which had a right to legislate on this proposal. And there we saw lobbying not just by the Big Four, but also by various business interests, business groupings, as well as particular multinationals themselves. And they succeeded in, I think, two important areas. The first one was that they managed to get a big get-out clause in for big business, which is that they are allowed to keep commercially sensitive data secret, which you can imagine how tax information, how profit information could be part of something which is seen as being commercially sensitive. And we saw that some of the most vociferous lobbying on this was from big business lobby groups in Brussels, where the Big Four have footholds. And now this proposal isn't finished. It's still live. It's now again with the Council of the EU, so the 28 member states. We know already that the Council of the Member States is even closer to business than the other EU institutions. And so there is now a real concern that as lobbying is focused on them, that this proposal might be so delayed that it runs out of time before the EU elections next year, or that further loopholes are included. That's a real concern right now.
Yes, and in fact, Germany just this month has moved to block public country-by-country reporting in the European Union, which pretty much kills what would have been the biggest and nearly global step forward in corporate tax transparency. Germany's finance minister, by the way, has refused to meet any tax justice campaigners to discuss why. He's now favouring an old European procedural trick, which is to apparently move the whole debate away from accounting forums, where you need a majority vote to pass things, to the tax forum, where you need unanimous approval. Obviously, Luxembourg or Malta or Cyprus or any other corporate tax haven will just veto it and shoot the whole thing down in flames. They're not going to agree to it. We'll keep working on that one. Keep listening to the TaxCast. So, Vicky, these are our hospitals and our schools and our lives they're messing with. Really, it is time to get the Big Four and some of the other tax avoidance industry players out of EU tax policy making. But how do you actually do that on a practical level?
Yes, so we propose that EU tax policymakers should be protected from this harmful influence that we talk about in the report, the vested interests of the tax avoidance industry. And when we say that, we're very much thinking about the example from the tobacco sector, where there are now World Health Organization rules and guidelines aimed at protecting public health officials from the tobacco lobby. And in fact, those guidelines say that contact with the tobacco lobby should be kept to an absolute minimum. And we think that those rules in the tobacco sector could be applied to a number of other sectors. We're running a campaign on how it should be applied to the big polluting companies when it comes to climate change policy, for example. But we think it's also applicable to the tax avoidance sector as well. Now, what that would look in practice, what a firewall would look like for to protect tax policy from the tax avoidance industry, that is something that we need to debate. But I think because the big four are so embedded in the process, that actually the firewall would need to be quite wide to capture all the different things that we've been talking about. So, for example, we don't think that those connected to the tax avoidance industry should be sitting on advisory groups to the Commission, which are advising on tax avoidance. That's the kind of example of something which we think a firewall should stop. Another one, when we're talking about public procurement, it seems to us ridiculous that the big four are receiving contracts specifically to work on tax related matters and impact assessments. You could think of some restrictions around lobbying, for example. I mean, when members of the big four have been found guilty for wrongdoing, you know, in the LuxLeaks and others, it seems to us ridiculous that they are still have access to decision makers. And of course, there's the revolving door, and there are rules in place, but they are ineffective at the EU level. And you could see how you could really tighten up those rules. But the important thing about the firewall, whatever it looks like in practice, what we want to see is a real change of culture at the EU level and at member state level as well, which stops seeing the big four as legitimate, trusted, neutral partners when it comes to stamping out tax avoidance.
You can find Corporate Europe Observatory's report, Accounting for Influence, How the Big Four Are Embedded in EU Tax Avoidance Policy, on www.corporateeurope.org. It's available in English, Spanish, French and German. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month.